HD2 and experience the People's News. We take the local headlines and give you a deeper dive with interviews, analysis, and insight. KPFT 90.1 FM HD2 is easy to find. Just list the stations on your HD radio and we are right under KPFT 90.1 FM HD1. Boop! Simple. The People's News airs on KPFT 90.1 FM HD2 on Sundays at noon, Mondays at 9 a.m., and Thursdays at 9 a.m. Also, live and past shows can be found on our Facebook page and at kpft.org.
Good evening, faithful listeners. Thanks for joining us again here on So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling. And it's found only on Houston's community station, 90.1 KPFT. I'm Larry Thompson, once again here to host another fine storyteller. And tonight's fabulous crop of stories is coming to you from my guest, the Story Man. Now, with a name like that, you can anticipate some good stories. These are going to come to us from Gary Whitaker. Now, Gary was born and raised in Haldon City, a suburb of Fort Worth. He claims, now this is interesting, folks, he claims that his brothers tried to dispose of him on Mother's Day in 1954. When he is 2.5 years old, by claiming he had accidentally fallen out of the car on the way home from Gainesville, Texas, after visiting grandparents. Well, luckily for us, Gary survived that bizarre incident at the age of 2.5, and he knew that he was driven to become a storyteller. Now, officially, Gary's been telling stories since 1993, when he scared the pants off a bunch of Boy Scouts. Not literally, of course. Yet, it was a feat that he is quite proud of. Gary was a member of the Tarrant Area Guild of Storytellers for 23 years, and he was a member of TSA for 20 years, and even served on the TSA Board of Directors for 3 years. He's also a puppeteer when telling his Gomer and Gary stories. Unfortunately, on the radio, you will not get to meet Gomer, but he is known as the Story Man, and he's not a liar. He's a redistributor of the truth. So, Gary Whitaker, I don't believe you've ever been to KPFT on the air with us before. I hope you're excited to be here.
Yes, Larry. This is my first time to tell on KPFT, and absolutely, I'm very excited to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, I hope you're just as excited at the end. Now, are you the only storyteller in your family? I mean, it sounds like your brothers might have been quite good at storytelling as well.
Well, Larry, I am the only professional liar in this family. As to that specific incident that you referred to of me falling out of the car, my brother stuck to the stories claiming total innocence.
Total innocence, huh? Well, I don't know. I'd like to revisit that topic, but you know what? We might need some psychological help, either for for us or for them. I'm not sure.
There is a whole story behind it.
There is a whole story, undoubtedly. But your first story tonight, you call that Hunting with Grandpa. And this is a normal tale with a bizarre twist. So let's hear Hunting with Grandpa.
Yeah, Larry, this is what we like to call amongst storytellers a liar's tale. It won me third place, by the way, at the Bernie Liars contest last April. So let me start with Hunting with Grandpa. I was 9 years old. It was 1961. And my parents had just abandoned me at my grandparents' home in Gainesville, Texas. Now, I had stayed there before with my sister, who was younger than me, but never by myself. Now, I loved Ma Bill. She was a sweetie. Woman could cook, and she could always have Dr. Pepper waiting for us in that refrigerator. And she was a darling thing to be around. Small but sweet. But Grandpa Whitaker, oh boy, he terrified me beyond words. That old man, he was grizzly. He smelled of whiskey, and he had his platoon sitting beside him at all times, which I might add was always full. And he always talked in a rough and gruff voice like he was wanting to get rid of me. Well, so that day, Grandma, for some reason, we called her Ma Bill, started telling Grandpa she wanted him to take me hunting. Now, I could only imagine the only reason he would want to take me hunting was to lose me. I couldn't imagine it. I've never been hunting before in my life. The only thing I'd ever shot was a BB gun. Well, she hogged him and hunted him and drove him. And he finally gave in. Next morning, I woke up at old dark 30. Now, I mean dark 30. There was no sun in the distance at all. Drugged me out of bed, threw clothes on me, fed me a full course breakfast, eggs and bacon and potatoes and pancakes and hot coffee and orange juice, and threw me in the old 44 Ford truck. Now, when I say that old truck was held together by baling wire, I'm not kidding at all. That old thing was a rattle trap. It was something to be in. And safety was not a word back then for kids in a truck or in a car. And you had to defend yourself while driving in the car because you had a steel dash in front of you, glass on the other side, and a wood seat underneath you, and you were bouncing all over the place, hanging on for dear life. So I had no idea where we're going. And Grandpa's not saying a word to me. We disappear into the darkness. We drive through potholes big enough to drop cows into. And I am just floundering around in that car till finally we drive it off the main road and disappear into the woods and finally come to a stop. Now, about now, the sun's starting to come up, and he drags me out of the car, and he gives me this big old shotgun. Now, this thing weighs more than I do. I probably didn't weigh 80 pounds back then. It probably weighs 150 pounds, and it's a double-barrel 20-gauge, a double-trigger shotgun, and I can't even lift it up, and he has to put a stick in the ground that has a Y in it and put the barrel on top of it just so I could shoot it. I think that's a trash can stare, all right? And they obviously been shot at before. So he shows me how to shoot the rifle, and I'm shooting it one barrel at a time. I want to tell you right now, no trash cans were hurt in this shooting. They all got away, scathed completely. The trees behind them suffered severely. They will never hurt anybody again. But the trash cans, and every time I missed that trash can, that old man, he would go, "Boy, you couldn't hit the broadside of a barn." I started hating that old man. Well, every time I shot, he would say that mantra of his. It was driving me bananas. And so finally, he gets tired of me. I mean, I'm not hitting anything except for the trees. And so he said, "Okay, let's go hunting. It's daylight outside now." And we start marching. And I swear it felt like we'd been walking 10 miles. And I hadn't shot anything. But about every 10 minutes, Granddad would suddenly shoot the shotgun. And I was walking out front. And he was behind me. And I would just drop to the deck like I was a ton of rocks. And he would laugh at me. And the only time I ever heard that man laugh. And I, in my mind, I was thinking, this is how he's going to get rid of me. Yeah, I could see him going home to Grandma Bill now. "Yeah, Grandma, that boy, he was a total klutz. He tripped on that shotgun, blew himself smithereens, and, well, you know, there wasn't anything left. But I did get this big old rabbit." So, yeah, this is how I saw things going. So we finally go down into a a depression where there's a creek and trees all around, you know, like a creek bed. And I hear something coming from behind us. It sounds big. Now, I figure if it's big, I can hit it. So I spin around with that shotgun, bring it full up at right level with Grandpa's eyes. And his eyes got as big as saucers. The old man hit the deck like a ton of rocks. And I pulled both triggers at the same time. I did a complete flip back into the creek and landed flat on my face. Grandpa jumps up at debris, is showering us as something passes overhead big. And then there's an explosion. Blah. Well, Grandpa grabs me, yanks me, and says, "Boy, what you done?" "Oh, no, I'm trying to shoot something." "Come on." So he drags me up the hill. We get to the top of the hill. There's a barn and a house, oh, about 50 feet away from it. And the barn has what looks, there's no other way to describe it, a flying saucer impaled in it, is laying kind of a 45 degree angle, and the barn's on fire and flames are coming up from it. And out of the house comes this old fella. He's got his long johns on. He's carrying a big old shotgun. Grandpa called it a blunderbuss. He comes tumbling out of there. He's got one leg. He's got a peg leg and one eye. He's long gray hair and a beard. He comes tumbling out there, waddling on that peg leg. A door opens on that little flying saucer. It's about 50 feet across. And a little door opens down at the bottom, and this little spaceman comes tumbling out. And he even had on a little space suit and everything, a little helmet, you know. And he's gurgling something like he's trying to say something. He's walking toward the old man who Grandpa said was Ahab. And the old man Ahab starts screaming, "You call me thug? You destroyed my barn. Now you're going to die." Boom, blah. There went the little green man. Another one comes tumbling out. He yells again. Grandpa grabs me, shoves me to the ground. He says, "Boy, if Ahab figures out you're the one who put that thing there, we're going to be a boon flat. Let's get out of here now." He grabbed me and yanked me up just as Ahab disappeared into the little spaceship, and we were hearing boon flat as we ran away. That old man, he could run for an old man, I'm telling you right now. He grabbed both shotguns, grabbed me by the collar, and hauled me back to that truck like I was a feather. Threw me in it, and we took off down the road. When we were leaving, you know, when we got back on the road, I was looking back and I could see the fire rising up. And I thought to myself, "Wow, I got that thing." Well, I started to point that out to Grandpa. I said, "Boy, whatever you do, don't tell Grandma what you done. We're both going to die if you do. We'll both be a boon flat." I thought, okay. So nothing was said about it. But then a week later, there was an article in the Gazette, the Gainesville Gazette, talking about how old Ahab's farm was destroyed by an unidentified flying object that was believed to be a military jet. It was cornered off with high electric fence and had radioactive all around it. And they hauled off all of the barn and the house. And in the article, it claimed that Ahab had been killed. Well, today, folks, if you were drive east on Broadway out of Gainesville and turn down Country Road 2121, and it does a little hook around for a few miles down, and you'll come out into a clearing, you look off to the right, you'll see the remnants of that old electric fence, and you'll see those radioactive signs all around it. That, my friends, that is where I hit the broad side of the barn. And that's my story of hunting with Grandpa. Thank you.
You finally succeeded in hitting the broadside of the barn.
Yes, sir.
I like that. I like that. And there's a little crooked stick, and you got to rest the barrel on that little forked stick there. But no trash cans were harmed during the story. That's very important. You know, because Absolutely. Sometimes. Our listeners would be concerned about the sanitation equipment being damaged during our stories. You never know what kind of story you're going to hear on So What's Your Story? Now, that's a great way to start, but I know you've got another story coming right behind that. And this one, you call this one the Golden arm. And I've been doing storytelling a long time. I don't believe I've ever heard the golden arm, but I'm anxious for you to share it with our audience. Let's hear the golden arm.
All right. Actually, Larry, this original story of the golden arm was handed down by Mark Twain. And if you Google Mark Twain and the golden arm, it will come up in searches. And it was a story that was actually kind of handed down from him from what I've read. So the golden arm is a fun story, fun ghost story. Long time ago, during the days of the old West, there lived an old man and old woman who lived in a log cabin not far from town. Now, every night when the sun was set, they would go out on the front porch to watch the sun set. They'd be in the rocking chairs. The old man, he'd be in his rocking chair with his knife, whittling on a piece of wood. And the old woman, she would be in her rocking chair right beside him, and she would be caressing her arm like it was something special. And it was. She'd lost her arm in a farming accident, and they replaced it with an arm made of solid gold. Well, it was worth more than anything they ever had. But every night she would ask her husband, William, promise me you're going to bury me with my golden arm when I die. And of course, he'd laugh at her. Well, what do I need with that golden arm, honey? I don't need that thing. It's yours. You can keep it. Well, things happened. A few months later, she passed away. The custom back in those days was there was no graveyard nearby, so he had to bury him herself. He built her own coffin, and he kept her in the room that night, as was the custom, with candles all around her to protect her from evil spirits. But there was an evil spirit in him, for as the candles burned down, they reflected the light off that golden arm. And he thought to himself, she don't need that old thing. What's she gonna do with it? She's dead. So he reached into the coffin, yanked that golden arm off, slid it under his bed, and then sealed that coffin shut. Now, as the night passed, the candles burned down, and he began fretting about what he had done. But then a storm started moving in, lightning started flashing, thunder started rolling, winds started howling, and the sun began to rise, and he was ready to get her out of there and get her into her grave. He dug a grave about 100 yards away. So he drags the coffin out into the wagon and loads it up and takes off, headed towards the grave that he has made for her. When he gets there, the rain is just beginning to come down, just lightly, kind of like a sprinkle. And then as he drags the coffin over and drops it into the grave, he starts shoving the dirt in there. It starts raining a little harder and harder. The lightning starts flashing. Thunder rolls all around. Trees are swaying and leaves are being ripped away and swirling all about. And that's when he heard it. It sounded like it was right behind him. Who's got my golden arm? Ooh, he stopped. He looked around. He sounded like his wife. But she was down there. What's she doing up here? He looked all around. Didn't see her anywhere. He started shoveling that dirt in faster and faster and faster. Wanted to make sure he got her good and buried. And as he was finishing up the grave, the rain was coming down now. It was pouring down in sheets. He was soaked to the skin, and he heard her voice again, but this time it sounded like she was in the wind. Who's got my golden arm? Ooh, he threw down that shovel. He ran to the wagon. He jumped in it and took off. Yeah, and that wagon started running, but lightning struck the tree in the path, and a massive tree crashed down right in front of him. Well, that wasn't going to stop him. He jumped out of that wagon. He jumped over that tree and started running, but the ground had turned to mud. And as he ran, he slipped and fell and rolled in the mud and jumped back up, the old heart beating hard in his chest. And then he finally made it to that front porch. He's hanging on to the post, watching the rain, listening to the wind, breathing hard, sucking in air. But he doesn't hear her voice. Just a silly old man, screwing myself. That's all I am. He turns around, grabs hold of that doorknob, starts to open it. And it was as if she was right behind him. Who's got my golden arm? Oh, he flew through that door. He closed it. He locked it. Click, 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 click. Shoved a dresser in front of it. Ran to his bedroom. Closed the door. Closed it. Locked it. Click, 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 click. Ran to his bed. Jumped in the bed. Pulled the covers over his sheets. The bed where the golden arm was, by the way. At first, he didn't hear anything at all. Just quiet. And then he heard movement on the front porch, like somebody with wet, muddy footprints moving along. And then the door, the front door. Door opened. He heard somebody move toward his bedroom door. Heard his door click, the door open. At first, nothing happened. He could see something through the sheet standing there. And when lightning exploded, filling the room with light, he saw a figure standing there. And it started moving closer and closer to him till finally the figure stood over him. Long, wet hair hung down, dripping on the sheets. And he lay there, shaking like a leaf. Take your golden arm. I don't want your golden arm. I don't want your golden arm. Go, 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 go. But she didn't say a word. She just stood there. And he waited. You've got my golden arm. Oh. The next morning, the sheriff rode by. Saw the front door open, went inside and found the old man lying beneath the sheet, dead. His eyes wide in terror, his mouth in a silent scream, and the golden arm, it wasn't found. And they say sometimes during stormy nights, you'll hear the old woman out there looking for her golden arm. Who's got my golden arm? I'm waiting for her. The golden arm.
Fantastic. That is about as good a way as we can start in October as I can imagine. This is Larry Thompson. If you're just joining us, we're hearing stories tonight from my guest, Gary Whitaker, on So What's Your Story? Only heard on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston's community station, and 89.5 in Galveston, 91.9 in Huntsville. And don't forget KPFT's free internet on HD2 to meet your news, arts, and entertainment needs. We're proud to be here because just as KPFT is Houston's community station, So What's Your Story is Houston's community show. Our guests are ordinary folks with extraordinary tales to tell, just like y'all. Now, Gary, the golden arm, your last story there, is that a story that's reasonable for quote-unquote normal people to tell?
Absolutely, Larry. In fact, I would say that's a great first story to use. It's very simple. There's not a lot to remember. And you can explore that movie, that story as much as you want to. You can do all kinds. I've got a dozen versions of that story where I can stretch it out, where I can do more scarier stuff. The thing to remember about this story, though, is the jump tell. Now, at the very end of the story, obviously, because this is audio, not video, you can't see what I do. Normally, what I do when I'm telling that story is I focus on one person in particular as I near the end, called the jump. And what I try to do is I zero in on that person and draw everybody toward focus toward that person. And then I do the jump at somebody else when I say, you've got my golden arm. And believe me, I don't care if you're 6 years old or 40 years old, you're going to jump.
So there's a reason they call that a jump story, because somebody's going to jump.
Absolutely.
And I like the that sound effect that you're using for the muddy steps on the porch. I think we hear stories and we tell stories and we think about stories, but often things like sound effects, the lightning crash, the thunder, the way the wet hair drips on the sheet, all those things are added in by the storyteller.
Absolutely.
To help bring that picture to the listener's mind. I guess, would you say that storytelling is as much almost a visual art as it is an auditory art?
It absolutely can be. And it does depend on the story too, as well.
Certainly, yes, certainly.
It absolutely can be.
And this, like a story like this from Mark Twain, you're going to find this. You can, of course, everything's online now, but the library has a ton of stories like that. If you're going on to Google and searching stories, you're going to find things like this. You've got to take it apart, figure out how you're going to present it, figure out how you're going to make it your own story.
One of the things I do is I write my own version, and that helps me to get it into my mind and turn to how I want to tell the story. Also, it makes it my story as well.
Now, we just brought into the airwaves there the ghost story, kind of a simple ghost story, and I think you have another one. You know, I might need a thunder and lightning sound effect or an evil laugh. This next story you have is called Nightmare Theater, and why don't you share that story with us now?
Okay, Larry, Nighttime Theater is a part of one of my new programs that I call The Good, The Bad, and the Ugly. Is family-friendly stories for all the family, for the kids and adults together. And I think after we've all been through COVID, this is something we need. And that's why I've been pushing. Okay, fun story. I hope y'all enjoy this. Nightmare Theater. It was around 1961. I was 8 years old. I was lying on the floor watching our black and white TV. Nighttime Nightmare Theater was on. I loved Nightmare Theater. It was great. It was wonderful. And the movie that was on that morning, that Saturday morning, was Invaders from Mars, the 1953 classic, one of my favorites, about a kid who witnesses a flying saucer landing in literally in his backyard and disappearing beneath the earth. And then somehow the aliens are grabbing the adults and people around his neighborhood and taking over their brains. And when they've been had by the aliens, they have marks on the back of the neck. And little David, that's his name, little David is trying to figure out how to stop the aliens all through the movie. Now, I fell asleep about halfway through the movie. And when I fell asleep, apparently I started dreaming about it. And in my dream, I apparently mixed The Wizard of Oz and Invaders from Mars, because I was killing the aliens with water. Now, I don't remember how the movie ended the aliens, but that wasn't it. I'm pretty sure of it. So anyway, I woke up after being asleep for a while, and the movie was just over, and Mom's hollering at me. She's in the kitchen. She'd been cooking peanut butter cookies, homemade peanut butter cookies. Just sucks the life right out of me. And she starts calling. Now, I got to tell you something right now. Mom never offered me any peanut butter cookies, period. I was always told, get your hands away from there, boy, ask for somebody else. So when she started offering me peanut butter cookies, I was a little concerned about it. So I slowly walk it up, walk over there, and I'm watching her as she turns around. I'm trying to look at her neck to see if there are marks back there. And she turns around, she's holding a plate of three gorgeous, monstrous peanut butter cookies and a glass of milk. That's the only way you can eat peanut butter cookies. I'm sorry. And so I look at her and I look at the cookies and I look at her and she's smiling at me. Again, something that never happens. And so I took the plate and I took the milk. I backed away from her. I wanted to be sure that I was okay. So I backed away from her till I got to the back door. And then I quickly turned around, opened up the back door and slid outside as fast as I could. I walk out to the swing and sat down in it, devoured my peanut butter cookies, put the plate on the ground. Of course, where else would I put it? And drank my milk. And then as I sit there swinging, I hear noises coming from the back of my yard. Now, Dad had built years ago a playhouse back there, a wood playhouse. It's great. We used it all the time. And our yard literally was sand. I mean, it was like our yard had been a sand at a beach at one time. And so I hear this noise coming from the back behind the playhouse. It sounds like voices. And I get out of the swing and walk over there. And as I walk closer, I see a big opening in the dirt, like a doorway, just like in the movie. And as I walk closer, I see things moving beneath the earth. And I hear shouts and screams and growls. And I think, oh no, they're here. They've invaded. I run back and grab the water hose. It has a sprayer on it, a nozzle. And I turn that thing on full throttle, drag it all the way out. I mean, we're talking nearly 30 yards. Drag that thing all the way out there to the very back to where I'm within about 15 feet of them. And I turn on the water hose, or I turn on the nozzle, and I start spraying it. Oh, the screams. The monsters were hurting. It was obvious. They were screaming and shouting and begging to stop. And I just kept on spraying. And then they stuck their heads out. They were horrible to see, horrible to behold. They had a horrifying mask. One of them looked like a wolf man, and one of them looked like Frankenstein. And they ducked their head back. And so I ran up closer, and I started spraying right down into that hole. And they were screaming and everything. Now, before I did this, I had filled up a bucket full of water and brought it with me just in case I needed a coup d'etat, you know, to finish off the monsters. And so all of a sudden, my water stops. I turn back, Mom's standing back there at the hose and has turned it off. And she's shouting at me. She's screaming at me. I'm thinking, she's an alien. She starts walking, and she's got her hands on her hip. And she's walking and she's doing the finger and everything, you know, shouting my name, all five of them, or whatever they are. And I'm screaming at her, Martians, invaders from Mars, Mom. She walks up to me and said, well, she's about 10 feet away from me. I grab the bucket. I throw the whole bucket on her, head to toe, got her. And you know what? She did not melt. Not even a little bit. She did grab me, though. Grabbed me by the nape of my neck and dragged me back to the house, screaming all kinds of weird things at me about no invaders. I can't watch TV anymore. You're getting crazier by the day. And that's where your brother and his friend out there. It was almost Halloween. They were wearing their monster masks. And I did not know this. I had been gone the week before. And while I was gone visiting my cousin Johnny, Dad had dug this pit back there and put plywood over and cut a door into it. So she threw me into my bedroom. And that's where I stayed for all that day. And I couldn't watch TV for 3 weeks, one for my brother, one for his friend, and one for my mom. And I was okay with that. I really was. I was okay with that because, you see, I was safe where I was. This was my sanctum. I had all my real monsters around me, my plastic little 8-inch monsters and my posters all around the walls. And these were American monsters, okay? They weren't from some other planet. They were American monsters. And I knew because they were American that I was going to be all right. And so when they finally let me out of the room, very warily, I might ask, I very carefully kept my back to the wall everywhere I walked for the next 3 weeks. And you know what? none of them were invaders from Mars. Thank you very much.
Man, I can, you know, I did not see that coming with that bucket. You know, that's the final napalm and then she comes at you and you toss that bucket right onto her. I don't know, Gary. I think
three weeks might not have been enough.
3 weeks might not have been enough. My goodness. Now, October is upon us, and we do start thinking about Halloween and ghost stories. Would you say that you tell a lot of ghost stories?
I love telling ghost stories. It's one of my favorite things to do. I thrill at telling ghost stories. I love the fun and drama of them. I do not get to tell them as much as I would like to.
Now, who's the audience? Who's asking for these ghost stories? Because, you know, a lot of little kids might be scared. A lot of parents might say, oh, no, we can't do ghost stories with.
That has happened. I've been hired many times to do ghost stories in libraries. I advertise basically for teen groups. I prefer teen groups personally, but I will do younger groups. I'll modify the stories for the younger groups. For many years, for almost 20 years, I was doing storytelling for Boy Scouts. And I did lots of camporees and stuff like that, where I performed for dozens of troops simultaneously, where I ran workshops for stories, for scouts to teach them how to utilize the concept of storytelling, how to apply it. I've done many workshops here in locally in South Lake. In fact, for Miss Elizabeth Beeman, I just did what she was a helper with me on some of the workshops that I've done. I've never been invited by school to do ghost stories. I know they used to invite some people to do ghost stories, but that was a long time ago. And I can tell you right now, about 10 years ago, everything started shifting. Just probably lots of reasons why, but I've never been asked to do ghost stories at a elementary school, or for that matter, for a middle school.
You know, there's a school of thought around ghost stories that certainly around these parts, ghost stories are used for a long time as teaching tools. You know, parents would tell their kids to stay out of the onion fields at night because of Lachusa coming down out of the sky.
Absolutely.
And really it's just to keep you at home and safe in your house, you know, stay out of those fields with the snakes and everything else. And don't get lost.
Well, you know, when we there was lots of, we still had bobcats out there and
yes.
Mountain lions and lots of snakes all over the place. Whenever I went to Worth Ranch as a kid, there was always, the emphasis was for us to stay together because there's always a possibility of something happening.
Exactly.
When I used to tell stories, I did lots of storytelling for Weeblos and Cub Scouts. And the parents were concerned about me scaring them. So what I would do, because I would ask them if they wanted me, what kind of stories they asked. And the kids always said scary stories. Always
every time.
The parents are going, no. And I'm like, I'm sorry. You know, they're telling me they want ghost stories. And so I would tell the kids, it's like a roller coaster ride. I'd ask them, how many of y'all been on a roller coaster? Almost all of them had been on a roller coaster. I said, why do you go on a roller coaster? Because you want to get scared. And you want to have fun. It's the same thing. You're going to have fun and get scared at the same time. And it's a blast. And it's a safe scare, though. Storytelling is a safe scare. You can walk away from it after it's done and it's over.
Well, there you go. Now, folks, in case you've never heard this, we're coming to you on KPFT, as you know, and we're coming out of H-Town, and H-Town is Story Town and this show, So What's Your Story? And guests like our guest tonight, Gary Whitaker, So What's Your Story started the whole thing. We were the first storytelling platform in Houston, and how it has grown. Can you believe it's been since 2008? So What's Your Story has been on the air, and we're so, so happy to be here and bring in these storytellers. Now, we've got to mention our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, and they help keep us going. And that's a great place to learn the art of storytelling. You can join that guild and learn about storytelling. They meet virtually the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30. Now, I say that all the time, they meet virtually. I don't mean they're virtually meeting, like they're almost meeting. I mean they're meeting online. And their next swap is just a couple of weeks away. You can head over to their website, www.HoustonStorytellers.org, and you'll have a link there and all the information about their events. And while you're there, by the way, you can check on their website for past recordings of So What's Your Story right there on their website under the menu item Radio Program. Go and check that out. And Gary would be the first one to remind us that storytelling is all over the state of Texas and beyond. And you can crank up storytelling skills with these guilds. You can join the Tejas Storytelling Association and the National Storytelling Network. There are tons of opportunities for storytelling. Now, Gary, I know that you've got one more story with us tonight. And the name of this story is Fiasco at Dark Valley Bridge. And you told me this is a ghost story that turns young imaginations up to 11. Not just 10. The imagination goes to 11. So let's hear Fiasco at Dark Valley Bridge.
Before I get started, I would like to say thank you to the Houston Guild for making this happen. And if I was a new storyteller or wanted to be a new storyteller, I would encourage you, because it was the one thing that helped me more than anything else. Go to a storytelling guild, get involved. It will teach you. The people are want to teach you so many things. And they're great teachers. And if you're a learnable person, it will be to your advantage. And you just never know. I mean, whether or not something's going to work for you or not, unless you try it out. I didn't learn to become a storyteller until I was 42 years old. And that was purely by accident. So with that being said, I'm going to jump into my story, and I hope y'all enjoy this. This is Fiasco at Dark Valley Bridge. It was 1963, according to my notes, that Troop 34 decided to go camping at Dark Valley Bridge. Now, I got to tell you right now, Dark Valley Bridge is out by Palo Pinto, near where the old Boy Scout Ranch, Worth Ranch, is. And it's a real bridge. That's a real name. And it's a neat old bridge. And underneath it runs Brazos River. Now, I've had many adventures myself at Dark Valley Bridge that I can make a dozen stories out of. But this adventure was not mine. At least I'm not claiming it. Troop 34 went out to go camping. Now, they had a brand new scout who had joined them. His name was Greg. And Greg had never been camping before in his life. He lived with his grandmother. And he was a sweet kid. They put him in the Hawk Patrol. And the patrol leader did everything he could to prepare Greg for the camp out, told him what supplies he needed to bring for cooking, for eating, drinking, sleeping, you know, medications, if any, you know, stuff like that. And he seemed to get it all, but what they did not know or did not understand was that he lived with his grandmother and she didn't have much money. So we went on to grandma and told her what, you know, what he needed to get. She said, well, we don't have any of this stuff. So they borrowed some things and for the camp out, but they couldn't get a sleeping bag and she couldn't buy one. So she had this big old furry blanket. If you held it up, it looked like a bear rug or something like that. It was about probably 6x6 in size or something like that. It was pretty big size, long furry hair all over it. He was fine with that. So he packed that into his pack and he was going to use that for a sleeping bag. So they got to the camp and he was excited to know when. I mean, he was just having a blast. And they were doing all kinds of things. His hawk patrol did birding for an hour, which really added up to them eating chips most of the time. And they did hiking and they set some small rabbit traps. And other patrols did other things. The bear patrol, though, they did the biggest thing and they didn't tell anybody about it. You see, they built a bear trap. Now, the fact that there's no bears in Texas these days, or back then, was, you know, had nothing to do with it. They wanted to build a bear trap. They were the bear patrol, and they were going to build a bear trap. So they built this, dug out a bear trap that was about 4 feet long, square, and about 5 feet deep. And fortunately, they picked a good spot, and it was right along the trail, and they covered it up with leaves and limbs and stuff like that, so the bear would fall in. Of course, the only bear they ever seen at the zoo and the baby bear, they figured he fit right in there. So anyway, so they all came back and then they had dinner. The patrols fixed their own dinners or burned it more likely. And when they were done, they had their campfire. Now the campfire was always a big thing, always a big thing. The each patrol would do some kind of skit. And then some of the boys would get together and do separate skits. And the skits sometimes were singing and or doing some kind of play or stuff like this. Stuff like Gilligan's Island is real popular today, just to give you an idea, singing one. And so the scouts did all their songs and everything and all the skits. And when they were done, the campfire was burning low and in the night sky, no moon or anything. And it was black as night. I mean, well, obviously black as night. It was so black, it looked like stardust had been thrown up into the sky with the stars. And as Greg sat there watching all this, he saw one of the old men get up, one of the scout masters gets up and he starts telling a story about the werewolf of Dark Valley Bridge who loves to eat scouts. Oh, he took them along the trail of the werewolf, howling and growling and hundreds of scouts dying. And they were, but by the time he was done, they were all scrunched up together like they were glued side by side, all the scouts. And then when they finished, instead of getting up and going to bed, they all just sat there, their eyes big, looking all around, wondering where that werewolf might be. Well, sure enough, they sat there for a while. And finally, the scoutmaster said, okay, boys, you got to go to bed. It's bedtime. They all got up as one. It was like a caterpillar, all their little legs moving together as they rotated over toward the tents, which were pretty spread out, by the way, and dropping off each of the scouts one by one until finally they had all got to their tents. Now, it turned out Greg was not sleeping with his patrol leader. He was sleeping with a boy that was actually a friend of his. And so his patrol leader did not see his sleeping bag, the fur blanket. Well, they all go to bed. They fall right to sleep. And sometime in the night, Mother Nature calls. She doesn't. You have no choice. Greg woke up. He needed to go. He'd been told about protocol. He had to go outside the camp to take care of business. But it was cold outside. It was late November. And he was shivering. So he grabs that blanket of his and wraps it around him all the way up over his head. He slides out of his tent and starts motivating down the trail. By now, the moon was out, by the way. And the moon was casting a gray pall across the land, giving it a very spooky and eerie look. As he walked, everything looked like it was alive to him. Finally, he came to a place. But right after he got up, right after he walked out of camp, the patrol leader woke up. He had the call of nature. He gets out, not with his tent or sleeping bag or anything, and walks out and heads down the same trail. As he's walking down that trail, he sees something standing there, big and furry, and it spins around, and he sees two red eyes staring back at him. And then he hears a coyote howling, but in his ears, in his mind, it was a wolf. It was their werewolf. He screamed. Greg screamed. They screamed at each other. He started pointing at Greg. The patrol leader did. Werewolf! Greg thought he was pointing at somebody behind him. He spins around, starts screaming, werewolf! And they both took off running down the trail back to the camp, running like madmen, screaming all the way. They ran, Greg running behind the patrol leader, and patrol leader runs into the tripod that had been built by the scouts, standing on the fire, knocks it over, and it catches on fire, and the fire sprints to the trailer. And as he runs by, there comes out the storyteller, who stands in front of me and is nailed in the gut with the patrol leader's head, knocks him down on his back. He is stampeded by the patrol leader, and then he disappears down the trail screaming. Here comes Greg behind him. He's sitting back up. He's looking. He's dizzy. And Greg plows into the storyteller and stampedes him for a few seconds and then takes off down the trail. Out comes the scoutmaster. What's going on out here? And all the storyteller can do is point that way. He yells at the SPL, the senior patrol leader. He comes out and said, go get those two idiots back. They go running after them with the flashlight. They find them in the bear trap, where they are side by side trying to kill each other because they both think they're werewolves. Finally, the flashlights shine into the hole, and they look at each other, both of them with their hands around each other's necks, and they realize what they're doing. It did not end well. They put out all the fires. And all the boys that night sat out around the campfire, as did the scoutmasters, waiting for the sun to rise. None of them moving. And the scoutmaster never told that story again. Fiasco at Dark Valley Bridge. Thank you.
Oof. I could see that coming when you said bear trap and furry blanket. I thought, oh no, this is going to be trouble. This is going to be trouble. Now, Gary, we're kind of winding down here, but I know I wanted to mention that you spent a lot of time with Lockheed Martin. You worked there and retired from there. Is there a place for storytelling in a business like that? I mean, I can't imagine you guys swapping tails while maintaining fighter jets or anything, but does business have a place for storytelling?
Absolutely, Larry. In fact, I did at Lockheed. I did a couple of programs for some of the special groups at Lockheed, and I know many storytellers that had done programs for businesses. But it does depend a lot upon what that business is looking for storytelling wise. Sometimes what they're looking for is not something that really can be done through storytelling. But storytellers are speakers also. Yep. And there's a lot more we can do besides just tell stories, because we grab a lot of information, shove it into our heads, and we keep it there. As to storytelling at Lockheed Martin, in my 36 years that I worked at Lockheed Martin, I heard some real whoppers. And their stories were all over the map. Yes, sir, there were some natural born killers out there who claimed everything from saving the F-16 program to fighting off prehistoric monsters. So, yes.
Prehistoric monsters?
Oh, we had some real geniuses out there. I'm telling you right now. It was quite a experience. And this was before I discovered storytelling.
There actually are rocket scientists. That's the place to actually go find a rocket scientist. I appreciate you coming out with us, and I know you've got a ton of stories that you tell. And you're going to be busy for the rest of the year, I'm pretty sure, as well. You've got programs around. I know you're doing something with Ichabod Crane and Legend of Sleepy Hollow. That's a pretty fine tale to be telling. And I think you've got costumes and everything that you use with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to be doing a program on October 27th at the Burney Public Library back in their amphitheater. And I costume fully for it. I retell, it's about a 45-minute program, and I retell pretty much the entire story. I do not tell the story in sequence. I tell my own version, because storytelling is not about memorizing like in a play, like an actor. Storytelling is kind of an organic kind of thing. It's kind of a living thing where a storyteller is interacting with his audience. And the audience can often determine how I tell a story. And I love telling the story of Ichabod Crane. It is a great story.
I like just saying that the book name. Is fun. That is a fun name to say, Ichabod. You know, we don't name children with Ichabod anymore. Well, I certainly appreciate you coming out, Gary. And as we wrap up our program tonight, I definitely want to thank you for coming around, and I'm pretty sure with the number of stories that I know you have, we will have you back on the air here at KPFT. And don't forget, folks, just keep it right here on KPFT for the best programming on the airways.
Thank you, Larry.
You're listening to member-supported programming on Houston's Community Station. We want you to make 90.1 a part of every day, whether you're home or you're driving home or you're just chilling. And be sure to join us every time we're doing So What's Your Story Wednesday, 6 p.m. Keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Larry Thompson, along with the rest of the team. I thank you for listening, and remember, the storyteller serves the story, not the other way around.
Amen.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Keep up with the conversation. Tune in to KPFT for the latest news, stories, and insights that make you stop and think and spark your own conversations. We'll keep you current with programs that provide information, ask questions, and explore different perspectives. Whether it's political analysis on Voices at Work, an inspiring guest on Progressive Forum, or an insight into a social issue from Houston Indie Media Center. KPFT is radio you can recommend to everyone you know, and it's radio that exists only through the support from listeners like you. Each donation helps us keep the smart, surprising programming you've come to expect from KPFT. Call or text GIVE to 713 713- 526-5738 or donate online at kpft.org. Keep the conversation going on Houston's community station, 90.1 KPFT.